with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It's a very special Winter Solstice 2013 edition of Friday on the Front Porch on the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you'll find, among other things, the entrance to the chat room, which is filling up quickly. Good evening, Jan. Good evening, Jeremy. Good evening, Jug. Good evening, Sergi. Hey, Lottie. And hey, Sparky. And hey, Texas Betsy. There will be more along presently. So jump right in. The conversation is fine in the chat room. The listen live button's also at headonradionetwork.com. So too the PayPal button and the traditional mail address. Okay? It really is. It's a, it's Friday on the Front Porch. And it happens to be the Friday on the Front Porch that happens along about the time, the day before the solstice. The solstice will come around, is it just a few hours from now or 24 hours from now? I always get lost on this kind of stuff. I would never have made a good ancient priest observing the skies. But we should, by all means, celebrate the solstice because, above all, the solstice, despite the braying of ignorant fundamentalist evangelicals everywhere, is the reason for the season. And yes, Marty, happy Festivus for the rest of us. Ferg and I were talking earlier today, and have the Flying Spaghetti Monster people come up with a winter solstice holiday yet? Because they really need to get on the ball if they haven't. No, as we've remarked upon before, early humans quickly learned that the Earth had a position relative to other heavenly bodies and the appearance of other heavenly bodies in the sky. Thank you, Jeremy. The stream is loud and clear. Thank you very much. And learning that the Earth had relative changes in its position vis-a-vis other heavenly bodies, began to notice that those things coincided with changes in the seasons. And it, especially the winter solstice, I guess the summer solstice too, began to be marked as a very special time. This is, after all, the rebirth of the sun. That's why the ancient Roman god of the sun, Saturn, had his holiday at this time, Saturnalia. Some of the traditions of Saturnalia included the slaves getting to be the boss and the slave owners being the slaves for one day. And it was all comical and upside-down, crazy world kind of wackiness. And of course, there are the solstice celebrations of pagan Germany, pagan Gaul, the pagan Celts. I don't know. Do we? Just like some of the Christian celebrations are a little bit off-putting, so too is the idea of taking a handy person, cutting his chest open, ripping out his beating heart, and building a new fire inside his chest. Texas. Wow, this is inspiring. Of course, as Texas Betsy has noted in the past, it is Austin. The middle school Latin students, which I find inspiring all by itself, that there are middle school Latin students. The middle school Latin students learned about Saturnalia today and about how many Christmas traditions come from there. Like, almost all of them, except the Christmas tree, which comes from Germany, and the Yule log, which comes from Celtic lands and primarily Celtic Britain. Yeah. So I hope everybody has a very, very happy, wow, five classes of middle school Latin. There's hope. But I hope you all have a very happy solstice. And I was just doing a little research and reading prior to the program, as is my wont, and noticed that solstice begins. Thank you, Marty. 12:11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time tomorrow. So just shortly past noon, and it has something to do with the elliptical nature of the orbit of the Earth. But that's cool. 12:11. But I was doing some reading about it, and the absolute, and you know, looking back, I think I felt it. Although that feeling business is a little bit dangerous for somebody who tries to live in a reasonable world. The actual darkest day of the year was about a week ago. And I'm pretty sure that, because it was just, it felt like the very fall of darkness itself had a weight. Dr. John's out there on the watch. Careful there, Bob. If you cast aspersions on flaying a volunteer and dancing for a month in his or her skin, my Lord Shipe Totec will ensure your corn won't germinate. Unfortunately, Shipe Totec doesn't really have to do that, because even if the corn does germinate, whichever god it is or goddesses it is, it sends the damn deer to eat them once they have. That's how it is when you live in the world of magic. But happy solstice, everybody. And happy rebirth of the sun. And it's just kind of nice to take that cultural long view and understand how much we have in common. The sacred fire of the Zoroastrians is a big deal this time of year, as is the worship of the rebirth of the sun among the Romans and the Etruscans. It's a big deal. And worthy of celebration, because otherwise this is a pretty damn depressing time of year. But it's going to get better. It's going to get brighter. The sun will come out tomorrow. Oh, shut up. But it is our special solstice edition of the of Friday on the Front Porch. And right there is what makes it a special solstice edition. We talked about the solstice. But Lordy, don't we have other things to talk about? One of those rather interesting things, I mentioned it last night. Not that there's a tattered robe with fraying stars and moons appliqued upon it, or a busted magic eight ball whose answer reads forever, answer hazy, ask again later involved. But last night I mentioned the celebratory remarks being made as a result of the Supreme Court of New Mexico having declared marriage equality to be a requirement of the Constitution of the state of Mexico. You know, states' rights. And along the way I said, which means it's really wonderful, because if two people of the same gender happen to love each other, now they can go and get married. And it'll be great for the legal community in New Mexico, because there's a whole new class of people who can now get divorced. But I also mentioned along the way that, on the other hand, you still got a problem if you're getting out of your car in New Mexico at the local Wally World and a poorly trained droog dog happens to alert on the seat of your car. Because then you will be taken off to the hospital, strip searched, cavity searched, given involuntary medical procedures, including but not limited to a colonoscopy, and then be sent a bill for it, all without a warrant as required under the Constitution of the United States. And lo, a story appeared unto them the following day. I just saw it. Although this did not actually happen in New Mexico, it happened nearby in El Paso. Raw story reporting, an unnamed 54-year-old New Mexico woman is suing the El Paso County Hospital District, the University Medical Center of El Paso, and four United States Customs and Border Patrol agents for what her lawsuit stipulates were multiple, redundant, and increasingly intrusive searches. Now, in this case, redundant does not mean boring. According to the court documents, Jane Doe was returning to the United States from Mexico when, at a border station in El Paso, a drug-sniffing dog... Oh, no. There she was, down in Mexico, eating the Mexican food, and, well, you know, things, certain things, a little bit of flatulence, perhaps, involved, but a drug-sniffing dog indicated that she may have been in possession of an illicit substance, or substances. In other words, just like the other two cases, the poorly trained dog, being a dog that likes the smell of poop, alerted on her car seat or something thereabouts. No, I said sit, Fido, sit. Dogs. So having become fascinated with the woman's automobile, for the next 6 hours, these defendants of freedom and liberty took Ms. Doe into custody, wherein she was subjected to what is described as a series of highly invasive searches, any one of which would have been humiliating and demeaning, according to the suit papers. Again, no warrant. No warrant for arrest, no search warrant. Here's how it went down. First, they strip searched her, this 54-year-old woman. They found nothing. Then they shackled her to an examining table and, for all intents and purposes, raped her with a speculum. Again, nothing in her vagina, even though Phil Robertson, the duck doofus, says that her vagina has more of that, whatever more of that is. No, nothing there. Not finding anything in her vagina, the intrepid protectors of freedom of the Border Patrol then performed, or had performed upon her, a full rectal examination. And then conducted what is horrifyingly referred to in this account as and from the suit papers, a bimanual cavity search of her vagina. That means they dug around in there with both hands. I can almost hear the squirming from here. And sense the outrage. Because it is outrageous conduct. The suit says Ms. Doe was mortified. Mortified in this case meaning she was made to feel unto death. Defendants, and somehow this seems a bit superfluous to me, but who am I? Defendants did not even have the decency to close the door to the examining room so that Ms. Doe would not also be subjected to being observed by passers-by as she endured a forced gynecological exam. See rape above. But that still didn't turn up anything. Then they made her... These law enforcement people are beginning to make me think that they got a right kinky streak. They then made her let them watch her have a bowel movement. And again, having sorted through that, like ancient priests trying to auger up the future out of the innards of a goat, they then made her receive a dose of unnecessary radiation in the form of an X-ray. Still no drugs on the X-ray plate. So that was not enough radiation, so they decided, well, what she needs is a CT scan. More radiation. So they then proceeded to do one of those on her. Again, no evidence of drugs. At which point they said, you can go now. I think I already went. No, she didn't say that. And she went about her way and said nothing of this and kept it all and pondered it in her heart. No, she didn't. She went and lawyered up, which is exactly the thing she should have done. Then, the fine folks at the profit-driven University Medical Center of El Paso sent her a bill for five large. Yeah, really. They sent her a bill for $5,000 for performing repeated medical rapes on her. There you go. Freedom. Wolverines! So that's what just popped up after I mentioned this apparently new thing that's happening in the southwest of the United States. I don't know. I thought it was at least an interesting coincidence. Lots of coincidences out there these days. Apparently, the goddess of irony enjoys the solstice season because she went to work real hard over... Okay, that's probably not the right phrase. She went to work with absolute diligence over there on the set of Duck Doofus, Superstar. Because now we have, and I'm not going to bother playing it for you, it's odious enough as it is, even just mentioning it, we now have proof that it was not a one-off for this homophobic bigot, Phil Robertson. No, he goes around talking to church groups, like in Pennsylvania, and explaining to them not only that he hates the gay folks, and not only that he yearns for the happy days of the Jim Crow South, but then he busts out all creationist in order to explain that you can only make a duck call noise because you've got that hangy down thing in the back of your throat that the Lord put there so that you would be able to simulate noises of ducks wanting to have sex so that you could then kill them. He also declares in this, and Texas Betsy might find this interesting based upon last night's conversation, he also announces that God wants him to kill ducks. When in fact we establish that actually, if he's ever done any duck killing on a Saturday, he will be taken outside the city gates and stoned to death. So we have that. But then there is the real moment of genius. You know how Phil Robertson doesn't care for the gay people and he's all obsessed about how gay people have sex? More so than most gay people are, really. Well, in a moment of true delight, Faith posted on my Facebook wall earlier today, Duck Dynasty creator, and again from Raw Story, And again, proof that the goddess of irony is alive and well, and if she doesn't love us, she at least likes to give some of us a giggle now and then. Duck Dynasty creator Scott Gurney starred in indie gay porn film. Oh my, oh my. Oh, Margaret. It's described as a dark, homoerotic indie film about the gay porn industry called... No, really. The Fluffer! Duck Dynasty creator star Scott Gurney portrayed a gay-for-pay meth addict who acts in erotic videos. It was screened at the Toronto Film Festival, among other places. And you can even find it over at a reference to it over at Scott Gurney's IMDb page. So it has been, to say the very least, an interesting day. It all sort of ties together. Kate has had enough of the Duck Doofus, by the way. She notes, by the way, a couple of his kin are queer. Not surprising. Not at all surprising. And again, it's not so much the story of that idiot as the hurly-burly rising up around it. We get moments like this that then allow us to see into the real psyche of the right wing. For instance, what's this cat's name? Mike Slater is a right wing gas bag, and he appeared on Radio Rwanda with Martha McCallum to explain exactly who it is that the Duck Doofus is just like. You know where this is going. We've had too many of these just likes already. I mean, there's Larry Klayman out there, the guy who recently won the preliminary injunction in front of the federal court in Washington, D.C., who has now declared that he is going to lead a revolution against Barack Obama, just like Gandhi. No, really. Larry Klayman, birther, deather, tenther, booger eater, right winger, teabagger, Larry Klayman, has declared himself to be just like Gandhi. And the larger story here is this tendency to historically misappropriate, and deliberately so, to misappropriate the heroes of real life and death, and in fact blood-soaked struggles for recognition of essential human rights. Let's check in with Radio Rwanda.
Radio talk show host and Mike Slater, radio talk show host from San Diego and Sirius XM Patriot. Gentlemen, welcome. Good to have you here.
Morning.
Let's jump right in. Richard, let me start with you. Do you think that A&E did the right thing?
I definitely...
Okay, so let's just move forward and see in Mike Slater.
And to be, responsible in his...
Oh, God, the irony knows no end. There's a picture of Martin Bashir.
If this were, a reality TV show, which is what it is, it's supposed to be showing real people saying the stuff that they think, okay, and you don't have to agree with them. You could hate what they say. But that's the format of the program, okay? So if this were a house, you know, full of gay people living in a house, and they were talking about sex, and they said that they thought that heterosexual sex was disgusting to them, that they had no interest in it, would you be horrified? Would you call for them to be suspended?
Well, I think this is a little bit different, Martha. If you look further down the interview, he goes on to talk a little bit more about...
I missed the mark.
Me. We're all created by the Almighty, and like him, I love all of humanity. Mike, get your thought in here.
Yeah, in 1958, a young boy wrote a preacher a letter saying that he's struggling with homosexuality. And this preacher wrote back, "Son, don't worry, there is a solution to your problem." That preacher was Martin Luther King Jr. Richard, do you hate Martin Luther King Jr.? Is he irresponsible? I guarantee you Martin Luther King Jr. loves that boy just like the Robertson boy.
That's laughable.
What are you talking about? What are you talking about? No, listen to me. The point is that the Robertson family loves everyone. That's the point here. Just because he thinks something wrong doesn't mean he hates them.
Yeah, they love everybody just like Santa Claus Martin Luther King loved everybody. Like I said, a thousand years from now, Martin Luther King and Nelson Mandela will bring presents to good little girls and boys, and if they're bad little girls and boys, their elf Gandhi will bring them sea salt. Jesus. These people are absolutely, remarkably unaware. Or maybe they are aware and they mean to demean the sacrifices of others. Because there's another one. Oh, yeah, of course there is. This yokel's name is Ian Bain. He plans to run for Congress. And in his run for Congress, he needs money. And the best way for him to get money is to ride upon the backs of the latest ginned-up controversy that will whip the right-wing teabagging birther, deather, tenther, John Birch booger eater into a white, and I do mean white, hot frenzy. Consequently, he sent out a fundraising email. Of course he did. Not gonna play with this. No. It's there on his website too. Alongside his banner that says "Repeal Obamacare." Today. It was posted today. It was posted at 4:23 p.m. Today, Ian Bain called Phil Robertson, star of the A&E series Duck Dynasty, the Rosa Parks of our generation. In December 1955, Rosa Parks took a stand against an unjust societal persecution of black people, and December 2013, Robertson took a stand against persecution of Christians. Parks, famous for refusing to give up her seat on a bus for a white person, as was the rule of her day, provided inspiration for a movement of equality of black people and white people in America. What Parks did was courageous, said Payne. What Mr. Robertson did was courageous, too. Do we have a name for this disease yet? This false dualism disease? Bain added that this exposure of Robertson's situation is an eye-opener for many who may have been previously in disbelief that the Bible is fast becoming considered hate speech by the media and society. Oh, for pity's sakes. They can't demean people fast enough to suit themselves. Oh, no, no, no. Some millionaire getting sat down on the bench during the hiatus his show was on anyway. Is the same thing as the systematic oppression of millions of non-millionaire human beings in this country based upon nothing more than the color of their skin. I live in astonishment at the mind that can work that way. Or the thing that might resemble a mind that can work that way. Ron and Raleigh noting, Bob, I'm shocked, I say, that there could be bigoted homophobes in Louisiana. Also the fact that the black folks in Jim Crow Louisiana were a bunch of happy singing pickaninnies should be obvious to all but the most unenlightened among us. A caller to You Know Who's program said of Duck Doofus,
he doesn't have a racist bone in his body.
He also doesn't have a racist brain in his body either, but who's counting? And that's only because he doesn't have a brain. Oh, I know. He's been to college. Well, you know what? There's an old Roman saying in Latin, oddly enough, that owning a horn does not make you a musician. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him mow your lawn. Duck Doofus apparently went to college, but college didn't go into Duck Doofus. Dr. John, if the Mexica were right and Ehecatl, that's a god, Ehecatl, Nightwind, who's pictured as an anthropomorphic duck, is the real god of the wind, then I know one redneck who's going to spend a long time in perpetual darkness eating ashes. And nobody's going to give him a copy of the Popol Vuh because he wouldn't read it anyway, right? And that thing comes in handy when you're traveling through the underworld. All these little things have a way of sort of linking together. Oh, go away. I don't want to run your video. It goes on. But, okay, so there's another story out there. And according to the Slate article, it has been sadly underreported. So let us at least try to remedy that situation as best we possibly may. The case we're talking about is called Salinas versus Texas. Yeah, naturally, it's Texas. And based on my conversation with Darlene last night, talking about the lovely things that happen during one's cup of coffee in law school, your brain really does get rewired. And it takes years and years and years to try to wire it back to something resembling normal, to the extent that that's anything more than a setting on a dryer. And one of the things they teach you early on is this maxim that hard cases make bad law. And what that means is that the fact patterns that wind up going to a place like the Supreme Court are often such that there is conduct in there that makes you a little bit squirmy, or a lot squirmy. And because it makes you squirmy, and because nothing fits neatly into a particular niche, you wind up getting a lousy decision out of that. You can multiply that by a bajillion when you've got people at the Supreme Court like the rats, plus moral hero Anthony Kennedy, who flaps so hard in the breeze you can hear him snap on a wind that would barely lift a kite. Again, Salinas versus Texas. It came out this past Monday. As Brandon Garrett writes at Slate, here are the facts from Salinas. This is the hard cases part of hard cases make bad law. Two brothers were shot at home in Houston, Texas. There were no witnesses. Only shotgun shell casings left at the scene. And I never know quite what to do with the G. Is it like a J? G-E-N-O-V-E-V-O. Is it Genovevo or Genovevo? Salinas had been at a party at that house the night before the shooting. And police invited him. Love that verb, especially when it's preceded by the word police. Invited him down to the station where they talked for an hour. They did not arrest him or read him his Miranda warnings. Salinas agreed to give the police his shotgun for testing. And then the cops asked him whether the gun would match the shells from the scene of the murder. According to the police, Salinas stopped talking, shuffled his feet, bit his lip, and started to tighten up. Well, we all know what that means, don't we? Clearly, that means he's a man in need of a good hanging. Or at least so the cops decided. So when they took him to trial, he didn't take the stand. He has a right not to do that under the tottering but still vaguely, in effect, Fifth Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. And lo and behold, the prosecutors, went on and on and on about how he had been uncomfortable when he was asked a question about his shotgun by the police. What? Well, Salinas was obviously aggrieved by this because he said, I remain silent. They don't get to talk about this. So, lo and behold, this case made it all the way to the Supreme Court, where goodness me, I'm trying to figure out here. Have I missed something? Well, we'll pretend that this is recent. Maybe it's not. But he can't. So the Supreme Court ruled. Okay, I have to know the answer to this. If I've been burned, I'm going to be pissed. We'll find out in just a second. I mean, and burned is not the right word. Sometimes websites... Okay, no, this is yeah, fairly recent. And what it boils down to is you don't get... to remain silent anymore. This is one of two rather disturbing cases out of the state of Texas. He argued that nobody should have been able to talk about whether he tapped his toes, bit his lip, fidgeted, turned purple, nothing. Because all he did was sit and you know, the rats on the Supreme Court said, well, hell, he didn't. He just stayed silent. He didn't say he wanted to remain silent. How's a poor, innocent police officer to know he wants to stay silent if he doesn't say, I want to stay silent? You can't assume that he wants to stay silent by the fact that he's just staying silent now. Of course, people like Fat Tony Scalia, son of a fascist, a real one, doesn't like Miranda in the first place. He wasn't under arrest, so he didn't have any rights. Understand, that's what we're talking about. Which is a really twisted way of approaching a rights-based government when you consider that we've got an entire nation, well, not an entire nation full, but a significant portion of a nation out there hollering,
yeah, but that feller's got the right to hate on the gays because Jesus.
So in Texas, and in fact in the rest of the United States, it is no longer sufficient for you to be silent when being questioned, and you have to sit perfectly still. And if you sit perfectly still, they will the cop will testify at trial that you sat perfectly still, and that is some sort of indication of your guilt. It used to be that if you said anything about the defendant not talking, that you were violating his Fifth Amendment right to remain silent. No more. Grant from Oregon sent me this other one. The story comes out of Alternet. Jody Gumow is the author. Remember that really terrible Tom Cruise movie that dealt with the concept of pre-crime? Minority Report, wasn't it? Yes. It was 2010 in Texas when police officers arrested Michael Fred Warrenberg, as well as some other folks, because they had watched his home for about a month. They'd had a tip-off from a stool pigeon that he and the other people were fixing to, they put that in quotation marks in the alternate story, cook up some meth. After the month, and a few hours later, with no search warrant in their possession whatsoever, this account says officers waltz through Warrenberg's front door. I'm guessing there was no waltzing involved. I'm guessing there was maybe one of those little cast iron battering rams they like to use, or maybe just a couple of shots, or who knows how. But they ran into the house and they grabbed a bunch of boxes of pseudoephedrine and stripped lithium batteries and other ingredients in allegedly to be involved in meth cooking. Well, they grabbed all that, but they went and got a warrant before they did it, but after they had busted through the door. But when they applied for the search warrant, they didn't say that they had already busted through the door, and they just said that they had a tip from a confidential informant. Well, the defendant, Warrenberg, got 5 years in the big house, and he appealed. And the second court of appeals in Texas said, you know, you're right, and threw the conviction out, saying that the evidence should have been excluded because the police had misbehaved. Then the case went to the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals. See, having multiple levels of state courts of appeals is a great way of making sure that people don't win cases, especially if you stack the top appeals court. And here's the reasoning. In Texas, the exclusionary rule, which is a rule that says things that are improperly or illegally obtained by the police should be excluded from mention at trial. The exclusionary rule bans illegally seized evidence from trial, but allows it to be introduced if it was first confirmed by an independent source. So in this case, the rat, the snitch, I understand. The Texas Court of Criminal Appeals is the Supreme Court of Criminal Cases in the state of Texas. Thank you, Betsy. The snitch says they've got them some meth-making stuff, and they're going to make some meth sometime in the future. Well, the cops can then knock your door down for a crime you have not yet committed. Oddly enough, there has been no outrage whatsoever on the right, and these liberty-loving, freedom-protecting baggers, birthers, deathers, tenthers, and booger-eaters have been as silent as the tomb. One judge on that court did dissent. That's Justice Lawrence Myers. He wrote, "It is obvious to me that this search warrant was obtained based upon the officer's unlawful entry into his residence. Search warrants may now be based on predictions of future crimes." So, if you're arrested for a future crime, because, and this is in Texas, if you're arrested for a future crime, you can't remain silent until you're arrested. If they just want to talk to you under Salinas, then God help you if you breathe. Your only hope is to pass out, in which case the prosecutor will declare at trial that you passing out from refusing to breathe or move was indication of your guilt. Got it? But. So, what do you do if you're a liberty-loving American besides, well, you need to go buy a gun? Well, if Mr. Warrenberg had had some firearms in there, he'd be even doing harder time. So the gun wouldn't have helped protect liberty. Sit, Liberty, sit. Why would this possibly happen? Because this is a fascist empire. Can we just say that and get? I know. It's a dog whistle word for the other side. He said fascist. He don't love America. I do love my country, and it grieves me when my country deeply departs from the freedoms and liberties that are enshrined in the Constitution. Never mind. But I mean, so, you know, with decisions like this, you like to come away with some sort of bright line, black letter law that you can say, don't do that if you don't want. But in the Warrenberg case, I guess the only thing you can come up with is, don't think about making meth. Which we all know from having read Don't Think About an Elephant, means that all you're going to do is think about making meth. I don't mean to, but I'm thinking about making meth right now. I have no intention to. But if I was thinking about hey, Alex Jones, why don't you think about making meth? And then somebody will come down there and that persecution will get started in earnest. I mean prosecution. Do we sense a pattern here yet? The right-wingers and the birthers and the deathers and the tenthers and the booger-eaters and the baggers and the birchers, they all want to, oh, liberty has fallen in America. And then they go on and they say, because of that one in our White House. When in fact it has been falling for a very, very long time. Because both of these cases use previously decided cases to reach their entirely incorrect, wrong-headed, predetermined ends. It is that worst sort of jurisprudence. It is ends-based jurisprudence in which you want to make sure, well, we got to make sure the bad guy stays in prison and don't get to sue us for $1 million for violating his civil rights. Can we come up with something that'll do that, Your Honor? Well, yeah, we can. Hell, we'll say that the cops had a tip and that even if they had illegally busted through his door or waltzed or whatever, we'll say that because they had a tip that it's all right. And that way, the dirtbag will stay in prison and he won't get to sue us and get none of our money. See how it works? Steve, with a couple of observations. Going back, subject line, gay folks. Dear Bob, sometimes I feel like a wimp or a whiner. I was listening to your commentary on the Family Research Council and the American Family Association regarding gay folks, transgender folks, etc. the other day. I will confess, I nearly had to turn it off. When I was listening to what you were saying, I really began to feel a sense of hurt from their words. I began to feel as though there was some sort of darkness closing in around me. The more I hear about what these people say, the more I don't understand. These people have to treat anything the least bit positive as it pertains to LGBT and transgendered folks as a danger to Westerns. Wait a minute. Let's do this right, because there's scare quotes. Danger to Western civilization. Or something foreshadowing the end of the world. Why? I desperately want to believe that there is something redeeming about these people. There isn't. Much the same way that I meet regular people all the time that I may fundamentally disagree with about any number of issues, even LGBT or transgender issues, yet these people are otherwise decent folks who work in soup kitchens, work in education, or any number of service capacities. They may disagree with me, but they chalk it up to a disagreement and move on. It doesn't become what appears to be an obsession about where LGBT stick their whatevers. Bob and my fellow Horn folks, I don't get it. Maybe it's because I try to faithfully follow Yeshua. I really want to find something redeeming about them. After all, I'm supposed to believe they are in some way my brother or sister. Yet how do I do it? How? I began to wonder, is this what black folks heard and felt when interracial marriage became more visible, particularly after the Loving versus Virginia case or integration? I can't say yay or nay. I will defer to someone with that experience to answer that question, Steve. But to back up just a minute, I said there's nothing redeeming about them. You know what? If you were hurt on the side of the road, some of them might help you. Others, as Yeshua told the story, would go to the other side of the road and keep walking, lest they be somehow contaminated by your injured presence. And I guess that's just human nature. But long before Yeshua was even a sparkle in his daddy's eye, there was a guy named Socrates, about 300 years before, maybe four, can't remember. The dates get fuzzy. And in terms of pure reasoning and thought, I hate to say it, but Yeshua's a piker next to Socrates. I mean, Socrates was thinking about the really difficult stuff. And long before Yeshua said, love your enemy or love your neighbor as yourself, just as simple, straightforward statements, you had Socrates who went through an entire process of intellectual understanding to arrive at the statement that the highest form of love, because it is so damnably difficult, is to love your enemy. Now, if I recall my history correctly, he was saying this shortly before the Athenian democracy of which he was a part would be absolutely ripped asunder by warfare with Sparta in the so-called Peloponnesian War. Farsighted people can see this kind of thing coming. And Socrates said the highest form of love was to love one's enemy. You want to read it? It is in one of the dialogues that is, the dialogue is called The Symposium. And it's historically fascinating, too, because it's a story of a drunken party given after a theater festival. And Sophocles is there. And Socrates is there. And, oh, for heaven's sakes. He would go on to perform stunningly for both sides, because he really was rather an amoral SOB in the Peloponnesian War. Oh, come on. Help me. He was there. And oddly enough, making homoerotic passes at Socrates, who was, no, thank you. But it's a fascinating milieu in which they decide how much water they're first they decide who's going to be the president of the symposium, then they decide how much water they're going to add to the wine, and that is an indicator of how serious the discussion is going to be, and then they pick the topic. And the topic was love. And Socrates, of course, comes up with the most just, most true, most admirable answer, that the highest form of love is to love one's enemies. So if you are really committed to that kind of a notion, you don't have to be committed to Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi, in order to be committed to the idea. You can also be a Hellenist or a Platonist. That's how Socrates wound up getting baptized in absentia by the early church. But bear in mind, these people who are decent on a day-to-day basis, that you can say hi to in the grocery store and bless your heart and say season's greetings or happy holidays, and they'll just say happy holidays back. By the way, in the war on Christmas, something I learned recently, the very first Christmas card of all time, and I learned this over at a blog by Dan Savage about Sarah Palin's new book, or Screed, or what, Manifesto, or whatever. The very first Christmas card of all time read, "Season's Greetings." But those people who are nice in passing, if they have details about you, will not be so nice. And all we have to do is look at a couple of moments in history, and we know the truth of that. And those moments are not worth going into, because they are hateful and mean, and I don't even like to talk about them, because people were left to die. But they are mean. But anyway, Steve continues, "I want those members of the Horn family, particularly my straight brothers and sisters, to know how truly much it means to have non-LGBT supporters. I mean, really, how much it means. Sometimes I really wonder what I would do without hearing your voice, or Jim's voice, or Bill's voice, or Kevin's voice, or Sandra's voice on at least a periodically regular basis. So thanks so much for listening." Thanks for being part of the family, Steve. Or the commune. Listening is a big part to having a big part of having a successful one of those. There's a PS attached to that. "After my situation from like rent and so forth, I've decided to start a not-for-profit company that will collect money and distribute as much as possible for people needing rental help or with utilities. If our so-called government of the people, by the people, and for the people won't help, then the people must help themselves. I don't care particularly for what seems like some sort of libertarian sentiment, but the fact is our representativeness of our government is irretrievably gone. The discussion of whether we had it at all is another question entirely. Jeremy responding, he says, I agree with Steve. And I love the concept that Steve lays out in the PS, and I think that probably needs to be happening on a much broader basis. It needs a broad foundation for this kind of thing. When you consider, for instance, and you know, maybe our friend Beth in Texas can tell me that it's already happening. When you consider, for instance, what has been done to the rights of women to attend to the needs of their own reproductive systems in that state, then you know what you need? You need people out there operating on the dollar here, dollar there model, whatever it takes, to make sure that women who need that care can get that care, even if the state of Texas tries to take it away from them. If you have to fly to a sane state, do that. Continue the legal battles, continue the struggle, continue the resistance, but try to pull a community together that can make sure that people who need help can get help. I've been doing a lot of reading lately. Well, I do a lot of reading all the time. But I've been doing a lot of reading lately about social justice and social change. And what I'm talking about here is certainly no manifestation of anything new, but the profundity of it just struck me a few nights ago. And that's this. We have a lot of people. Sparky pointed out something to me the other day, a post by Michael Brune over on his Facebook page or whatever. He's the executive director of the Sierra Club and makes six digits, and good six digits. Talking about how pleased and honored he was to work with all the tireless people in the Sierra Club who save the planet, blah, blah, blah. And the Christmas party, all the food was so good. And then he said something about we could have done with a few less tequila shots. I don't know. But what there is this thing that afflicts us, not us, but that afflicts organizations that profess to be trying to do good. And it's beyond the simple corporatization of the model. It is the truly pernicious idea that talking about something is the same thing as doing it. If there is anybody in the Horn family commune who thinks that because we sit around night after night and we have conversations, that that is an excuse for not putting getting feet in the street, then the whole purpose of all of this has been entirely missed. It is my hope that this would be inspirational and not aspirational. If you want to haul out that book that some of these fundies profess to follow but have never actually read, there's a verse in the book of James which in itself is a refutation of all the magical bullshit in the Pauline writings that says, be ye doers of the word and not hearers only. And it says, faith without works is dead. Maybe be ye doers of the word and not hearers only isn't in James, but faith without works is dead is definitely in James. And that applies. So, it's just something that's been on my mind, and I'm still trying to flesh out exactly where it all is. But this idea that if we talk about something, it is the same thing as getting our hands dirty doing something is entirely, well, self-defeating. Then, with regard to the Salinas case, Steve also asked, so, if you're not under arrest, you have no rights? Cops can stop me and do anything to me unless they utter the magical incantation, you are under arrest? Huh? Says Steve. Yes, apparently, if you go and read the decision. And see, that's really nothing new, and it's a part of this whole business about the diminution and destruction of our rights that's been ongoing for in excess of a generation. You know, Miranda was handed down by the Warren Court in, what, the late 50s, early 60s? No later than the mid-60s, I don't think. I can't remember specifically. But no sooner was it handed down than, among other things, Gerald Ford began fulminating about impeaching Earl Warren. And the game was, as Arthur Conan Doyle would put it, afoot. And the game was the absolute repeal of anything smacking of rights for accused individuals. At which point the law of unintended consequences was triggered, and you wind up with the broadening of the powers of the police state. Until you get to the global war on terror under Dim Leader, at which point there was a ruling that said you don't even have the right to refuse to answer a police officer if they ask you your name. You can be arrested for refusing to give a police officer your name. You can be arrested for your silence in this country. And again, this is another one of those moments when I put up my appeal to our international listeners. Is that the way the rest of the world operates? Now, if a cop comes up and says, "What's your name?" 9 times out of 10, I'm going to give him my name. But the idea that I have to, or I will be dragged off, and I don't know, depending on where I am, New Mexico or El Paso perhaps, subjected to a freaking colonoscopy over it? Well, it strikes me that all of this freedom and liberty protecting that the gun goobers are into, well, that boat has sailed. Brother. So that's kind of where we are. It is 8 minutes past the hour on this very special solstice edition of Friday on the Front Porch. Asa confirming from Canada that Canada is certainly heading in that direction, Bob. Well, remember, this is a disease that begins in the United States and then has a way of metastasizing all around the world because, well, you know, the Americans are doing it and, you know, they're all about the freedom. Whew. Lordy. So do we have some stuff to talk about? I got more, if needed. In fact, I've got a freedom protecting story out of Texas. And then I've got a fun little human evolution, human development story that It's been painted up real pretty by the goddess of irony. But for now, and I'm going to call break time, and we will get Friday on the Front Porch underway. Let me see, where's that? Yeah, okay, I've got the bat signal flipped for the Horn Malloy Skype chat group to fire it up. Got two lines open on the traditional phone lines, 304-658-3333, if you want to get involved in Friday on the Front Porch in that manner. By the way, a Mr. Stress bill update. I was told earlier today by Isaac that Bill is listening this evening from his rehab facility. Hi, Bill, if you're there. Hi. We're all thinking of you. We love you a bunch. You've been much on our minds and in our best hopes and thoughts. So a little break, and then Friday on the front porch, a very special solstice edition gets underway. This is listener-supported conversation radio. No ExxonMobil ads, no ads of any sort, fueled only by your desire to see it keep going. Per Robert Nostrella's statement last night, we are standing on a little hill this evening. Anybody wants to make that hill a little higher, seeing as how we'll be gone a day next week and a day the week after that, please feel free. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Living in the wasteland of the free. We got preachers dealing in politics and diamond mines. And their speech is growing increasingly unkind. They don't look like Jesus.
The song is several years old now, but Lord, doesn't it remain relevant? Miss Iris DeMint, Wasteland of the Free, becomes more and more apropos, does it not? 16 minutes past the hour on this very special solstice edition of Friday on the Front Porch, and we have the Horn Malloy Skype group all ready to go. Mouseketeer roll call.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Duncan.
Hey.
Hey, Betsy.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, Bob.
We got Jeremy, we got Larry, and we got Sergi.
Hey, Bob.
What's happening? All right, that that's the score, the Skype Horn Malloy chat group, and who knows, we may have more people wandering by at some point in time.
Somebody on the phone.
We got folks on the phone, and we're going to find out who. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Hey, Jim. Stand by. We'll bring the next Friday on the Front Porch participant on board. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah.
Hello?
How are you?
Hello.
How are you, sir?
Oh, my goodness gracious, Bill.
Yep. Well, I wouldn't go that far.
Well, okay. Yeah. Okay, Bill.
You talk about goodness. Well, maybe I could collect a few bucks for a Life magazine subscription. You never know.
You know? How are you?
Oh, you know. Relative to what?
How about relative to a week and a half ago?
Oh, much better. I still don't understand how you guys can interpret the fact that I'm babbling. My first wife would have said the guy does it 24 hours a day, you know?
Well, okay. He's definitely made a magnificent recovery. He's funny.
Well, yeah. I mean, it didn't take long. I don't know who can figure out how somebody can figure out when I'm having problems.
It was the fact that we couldn't understand you, and you've done such a very good job of making yourself understood that sort of began tipping people off.
Well, I figure out when the leadership of this program that I hear over and over again with you and Jim and you fill in the blanks, Thomas, when I can understand you guys, you know, you should have no problem figuring when I'm screwing up, you know.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. It was a little past screwing up.
Oh yeah. Well, I'm going to let it go and let you guys talk because.
Okay.
I've been sitting here saying and I've been listening. Well, it's so hard to get you guys on the radio anymore. One of my friends is. We're looking at one of my old computer copies is still working, but everything's been busted down and put in boxes, you know. Including most of my memories, but that's another story, you know. Anyway, you guys go ahead. I'm just here for the applause, you know.
Well, I think
Bob, I'd like to ask Mr. Miller where I can get his music, because I know that there have been a couple albums that were made, but I'd like to be able to hear them.
Well, the stuff that we recorded years ago with Mr. Stress live at the Euclid Tavern, a 60-minute piece recorded on 4-track at the bar by a friend of mine who is a master believer in the label that Mr. Kincaid used to work for. And the second one was called Stress Formula, which, you know me, you give me a pun and I'll run with it every time. So Stress Formula, and then the final was, Stressed Live? The third one, I can't even remember myself. It was a guy standing there with a five-shot 38 in his holster and a big-ass police riot gun under one arm. I didn't realize I was peddling the new right-wing model for the Freedom Group, you know. So those are out there, and now they're putting together a compilation of Cleveland bands. And I'm hoping to get a few of my former players put together, and I'm done, man. I don't want to do it anymore, you know. It's like not wanting to play or sing anymore kind of gets like when you don't want to have sex anymore. It's boring as hell. But let somebody else pour
out. I tell you what, Bill, you're tickling people pink. Dr. John said, add me to the chorus for Bill. You got a big fan in upstate New York with lots of good wishes. Darlene just wrote in and said, Bill, oh, my God, hooray, it's Bill. I've got a smile on my face from ear to ear. So happy to hear your voice. And Steve just said, Bill, woohoo.
Well, most women had a big smile on their face when I left the room.
You know what? We got to send a note of thanks to your doctors because they got you going great.
Oh, let me tell you, it's pretty funny. This place I'm temporarily staying at, there was two of the prettiest young women in the world who turned out to be of Russian-Jewish descent. And that's a few people that really caught my Russian-Jewish people who caught my attention who weren't banging me with hockey sticks, you know, or ballet dancers, you know. But I still have problems. I mean, Bob, I've seen things in this medical system that I have no freaking use for. And I wonder, sometimes it bothers me, are the right-wingers correct that these people will use this system to bounce us off of walls? I don't know. I'm just asking a question. Because I've seen things that there's been some woman down here moaning all day, and she ain't even seen her bill yet, you know. So I don't know. I've learned an awful lot in a quick study because I was always a believer in socialized medicine. But I suppose that's better than none at all, you know. That's all I can say, you know. So we are at a crossroads, and which way it's going to go, that's up to you folks out there who want to get out and vote or who don't want to get out and vote and who want to see the scales. Not me fish scales either, you know,
oh, yeah.
This went up to Jim. The scales.
The scales held by the woman with the blindfold?
Yeah.
Yeah, at this point in time, I kind of wish she'd peek once in a while.
Yeah. But anyway, I that's my opinion. I mean, I'm delighted to be where I am, but I've seen some funny-ass things. Today, I was trying to get out to go to the bank because you want to make sure that the money that is coming in to the system is going out where it belongs and not to some guy who, when they were packing your stuff, packed your checkbook, you know. But I noticed that I didn't write any checks and nothing was written on it, so believe it or not, you mean something's some kind of a definitive holding with justice is still going on in this country? Maybe there is a star in the east, you know.
No, we hope so.
Bill, it's obvious that if there is, you're one of the three wise guys.
Yeah, the three smart asses, yeah. Well, I'm telling you, there's, Bob, one thing about you, and you found the same thing, and Jim's found it, hard-boiled detective novels. Those guys could say six words and break you up and have you laughing.
Well, you
just crying out of the other mask.
Well, Bill, you just laid Isaac low, and it ran past me too, and I didn't miss it. When you said a minute ago, there's this woman who's been moaning all day and she hasn't seen her bill yet. Isaac just tweeted to me and said, "Priceless."
Well, yeah, it's very sad because all this week, last night they had some Yahoo DJ come in here with a Christmas show. You know, Elvis Presley doing Blue Christmas. You gotta be crapping me.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy.
I mean, to me, I'll take Panis Angelicus being Catholic, of course, as a kid, and singing the damn thing myself when my tonsils hadn't reached up the right proportion yet, you know. And shepherds and all the other damn and the common English American Christmas stuff makes a lot more sense to me than Elvis in Hawaii, you know. I mean, to me, you start talking about Christmas in Hawaii and all I can think of is four generations of guys on their way out to somewhere in the world to raise hell with somebody else. A real Christmas message, what can I tell you? I'm a sick bastard, I know it.
Well, I promise not to play Blue Christmas as a bumper or even Santa Claus Got Run Over by a Reindeer, Bill.
That has some humor to it. And
thank you.
Albert King did a thing about Santa Claus coming down the chimney, which is one of the greatest lines I've ever heard, because I think that's what you felt like after you dropped all this dough down into a burning fire. Good old stupid-ass Santa Claus, man. He's throwing that stuff around like it means something.
Well, tonight's first toaster goes to you, Bill.
Well, what for? Being an out and out, a guy with a dry sense of humor, or what? I'm killing myself. Just cut me off, then.
He'll be here all night. Try the veal.
Hey, Bob.
Oh, man, I have missed this. It's so funny what you hear on the internet. I watch these old guys around here trying to find the current correct website. And I don't understand what they're doing. Are they trying to find Alpha Centauri or what? I mean, it's just silly after a while. And then when they're done with the computer, because we were trying to download a version of Zoom. You know that program? Me and another guy were trying to download it last night, and I'll tell you what, you couldn't download anything in this computer if you had a mail chute.
Hey, Bill, stand by a second. Let me bring on another line here. I'm sure there's somebody else wants to talk to you. Hold on. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Anybody?
I'm here.
There's Jim. We know we got Bill. That's you. That's you, Kevin. Okay.
Yeah, I didn't hear the thing.
This thing's about 8 years old, and we won't get lost in midnight baseball, but it may not happen when you're the second guy on the hybrid, so that probably explains that. But the echo and everything will go away in a moment. Hey, Duncan, you were saying something a minute ago?
Oh, I just wondered if you could use that video I sent you over the weekend as a bumper.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's a very good possibility.
Okay.
Hey, I wanted to answer Larry's question real quick. Larry, if you go to YouTube and type in Mr. Stress Bill Miller, you'll find quite a bit on him. Bill's fairly famous, so...
I appreciate that, Kevin. It's good to hear you, and I'm really, really happy to hear Mr. Stress. I'm really happy to hear both of you. Okay? Thank you.
I feel sorry for you. Life is tough, you know, when you have to listen to the crap I spout.
Bill,
I'm so good at pushing out that crap, I ought to start my own government. You know?
I don't think you spout out crap at all, and I'm glad to hear your voice.
Well, Kevin, that really bailed me out a couple weeks ago.
One of those videos
I was listening
like
to nothing but old radio shows. As far back as a lone stranger finding his horse silver and all the rest of the crap, you know? And saying to myself, my God, these guys were damn good radio actors. Because they had to actually convey a feeling with just their voices and some sound effects. They didn't have a wide open field behind them with 10,000 men in this kind of color outfit and 10,000 in the other, making mincemeat of each other and not telling you much truth at all. It becomes an exhibition rather than a truth story. You thank you, Jim. I appreciate it. And Isaac, that's the nicest thing you said about me in years. Thank you, Isaac. I appreciate it.
Kevin, you were saying something?
Yeah, I wanted to ask Bill, one of the videos I found last night on YouTube was you and someone else doing a song called Stagger Lee. And since I can't see... The voice kind of sounded like you, but I wasn't sure. Was that you singing that?
There's a version of Bill doing Stagger Lee.
Yeah.
Of course, that's an old standard.
Yeah, we picked up the version that Dr. John pulled off. And not the Dr. John in New York.
No, Dr. John in New Orleans.
Much higher wit. Yeah, it was Dr. John in New Orleans, right. In fact, the guy who recorded on that Gumbo album was a guy who played for me in 67. It was a local yokel from Cleveland. It was one of those accidental tie-in where some guy made a connection. Which, those are the kind of things that make you proud. I imagine anybody who works with other young people and watches them do this, that, or the other thing, you know, all of a sudden you eat a lot of heart when you hear these young guys playing that you didn't know what to do with it at first, but they kick your ass and everybody else's afterward. That's a hell of a thing to use that expression, but I think most musicians out there know exactly what, or a good story writer, somebody, when you reach out, like Dr. John in New York, when he reaches out with a piece of word, it becomes a piece of evidence that goes upside the head of an idiot and cracks it around a little bit and rolls a few dice in the guy's skull, and Jim can do it too, and Isaac and a whole bunch of the rest of you guys have this ability, and every time you do it, you bring a smile to my face, and I need it nowadays, because it's just been, you know, it's just a, man, don't get sick, whatever the hell you do, just don't get sick. Maybe that's where I become a non-believer in gun control, I don't know. When it's time here, take a walk out in the desert, fat, enjoy yourself. Anyway, I'll let you go. I mean, let somebody else get moving here, because I'm just fired up just to be on the radio with their great voices. I mean, this is like listening to the voice of Matt Dillon and a few other people, you know.
Well, I don't know if I'm Doc or Festus or Chester, or I ain't Matt Dillon, that's for sure.
Oh, I don't know. You're not built like the other guy, but what a voice he had that. What the hell was his name, Jim? You're the.
Oh, didn't Broderick Crawford play him on the radio?
No, it was Cannon.
Go ahead.
What's his name?
Oh, yeah, not Broderick Crawford. Yeah, that played Cannon. Oh, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah.
Bill Conrad.
He didn't make an appearance on TV to save his ass until that show when they actually had a guy who looked like a guy who could be a private detective or any kind of investigator. Look, how many cops have you guys all met out there? You ever meet too many that look like James Arness?
Not hardly.
Got it.
No, not here.
Anyway, when you guys wind up, I've been bullshitting too much, and I want to shut up and listen.
Well, I think you've got people tickled pink. This is like an early Christmas for a lot of people. Well, no, this is a solstice celebration, so this is perfect for it.
Well, you hit it on the nose, because when I was a youngster, and being in a Catholic youth shelter, which in those days was hardly anything compared to what it is now, there was nothing like a Christmas morning with blue lighting all over the altar and all this other semi-pagan stuff going on. There's a blues singer did a song, "Keep the Blue Lights Shining and Let the Music Carry On." And they already had, you know, it wasn't just a barroom ballad. It was something they were using in the sense of lifetime, you know, church. Lifetime life. But anyway, I'll shut up. Somebody get rolling on something. I need to have my feathers dusted a little bit.
Well, you sound pretty good to me, Bill. It sounds like they're doing a good job with you, and I'm glad you are rapidly on the road to recovery and back to your old self.
Well, if I meet one more... Now, this week, I had an Asian doctor. This guy had the greatest French accent in the world, with one little possible exception. He was Syrian. I mean, he had the little pencil mustache, the accent. All he needed was to be waving a tricolor, you know?
Well, remember, Syria was within the French influence zone after the Treaty of Versailles.
Yep. Yeah, it seems that these big powers couldn't stop going around the world to lay their line of bullcrap on somebody else. Italians in Libya, French and British in the Middle East. And this is where the one bunch that are running the oil lines have a real level of independence.
Texas Betsy just pointed something out. I didn't know this. She said she typed to me, even though she is in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. You know, just saying. Texas Betsy said many Syrians attend French-speaking private schools. I had no idea.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yep. I said something to one of the medical people around here about France and Syria, and they looked at me like I had just said the stupidest thing they ever heard, so I just shut up, you know. But if you give me a shot at saying something stupid, I'll do it twice.
There's very little about international education that I don't know a tiny bit about.
And some that you know a lot about.
Yeah, a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. And I've got a little knowledge about most educational systems.
Well, as I say, one thing I learned from Arabs was how to take a tin pot, which is an IBEK, and boil water in it. And they use Turkish fine blended coffee and make a pot of that stuff where your eyes are rolling up like window shades. We're not the only country, and that's the problem with this country. We have become, in our minds, the leaders of the world. And this is some guy watching TV that thinks he's the leader of the world. And if some clown gets on from, you know, from some semi-religious group and starts clowning, the other American says, yeah, he's right, he's one of us. Jesus Christ. Well, he's one of us too, but that's another story.
Well, he is now, at least. Yeah.
Well, he is with me for a few hours, and then he goes away until the rock rolls out and smashes your foot in the spring, you know.
Golly Moses. Let's see. We've had a couple of new folks roll into the Horn Malloy Skype chat room. We've got Sentient, and we'll soon have Jay Cruzen. Nope, there he went. Well, he'll probably be back.
Yeah.
We've got one phone line remaining open, 304-658-3333, if somebody wants to participate on this very special Horn Solstice Holiday Edition. Don't everybody hide your light under a bushel. Sing out.
Oh, well, Bob, you want to talk about the winter solstice a little bit?
Absolutely.
Well, you know, you mentioned some other things about the winter solstice and its celebration. And strangely enough, you know, I hate to bring it up, but our dear old buddy, that terrible person, Heinrich Himmler, was the one who wanted to change all the holidays in Germany. And, of course, they used all the winter solstice and the summer solstice and everything, and would build big bonfires, this type, the other, to celebrate that as a celebration for a substitution of other religious things. But, I mean, they really raised that whole type of thing to a very high level as far as the Nazi calendar is concerned. And the winter solstice was one of the biggest ones, with huge bonfires and celebrations and, you know, adulation for so many things that were so bad and so wrong. But that's what they did.
Well, that was all part of the emphasis on culture. I mean, it's the same thing that wound up with rallies under that big statue of the guy that was known to the Romans as Arminius.
Arminius was the
Hermann Stinkmall.
Well, he was Hermann Göring used to write editorials in favor of Adolf Hitler to the papers and stuff during the days of their struggle, and he used the term Arminius. And, you know, basically what they did, they went to around, Himmler had this whole thing called the Anuverbi, in which they were trying to dig up all kinds of things that would exalt their particular culture when they were sitting around campfires when Rome was at the height of its glory. But nonetheless, you know, it's a strange thing enough, Hitler never got into that stuff. And, you know, he was, you know, he just kind of let Himmler do it and just said, well, I don't want to be personified as any SS saint or something like that. So there was a definite problem between Heinrich and Adolf as far as that's concerned. But, you know, that's just my only comment about the winter solstice and how it was used.
Well, I went looking around, Jim, trying to find evidence of cultures that didn't take some note of the solstice. Because one of the most fascinating things about some of the earliest attempts at monumental construction, it seems that if you research them long enough, you're going to find out that they've got a celestial orientation to point out what days the summer and winter solstice are on. For instance, tomorrow morning on the Yucatan Peninsula, a shadow will creep down the staircase of the temple pyramid at Chichen Itza that makes the Quetzalcoatl Kukulcan effigy appear to actually writhe like a snake. Now, that's a huge pyramid. There's a lot of technology involved in that.
Yeah, you got to believe it. It's just incredible.
And even here, it's fascinating. Even here in almost level West by God, Virginia, if they haven't blown it up, no, I'm not kidding. They may have blown it up by now. I'm not sure, but there was a Harvard researcher who became quite convinced that he had found evidence of the arrival of Irish monks in Appalachia sometime in the late first millennium of the current era. He said there was a hymn to the Virgin Mary in praise of the solstice and the birth of Christ carved in what was called agam into some rocks that on the summer solstice happened to be pierced only on that day by the rays of the sun. He was largely discounted the Irish monks part and the agam were largely just please, but the rock formation was pretty clearly not haphazard, and we have evidence. Monk's Mound at Cahokia in Illinois is oriented on a solstice axis.
Oh yeah, there are a lot of things like that. It's just, you know, it's just incredible how these people did this back in their day, and how they were able to do these alignments, these astronomical alignments, and so that, you know, on certain days the sun would come into certain portions of buildings that they constructed. I mean, in parts of what, northern Scotland or wherever, there's one in which it either comes into on the 21st of December or the 21st of June. You know, it's just incredible, honoring the winter and the summer solstice. So, and not to even mention Stonehenge. You know, it's just, there are things that just can't be explained, in my opinion. They're trying to explain them, and I hope they continue in their efforts to so do.
Well, they have very practical explanations. It is a means of understanding when one does certain things based upon the timing of the year. You mentioned the stuff in the British Isles. There are things in Scandinavia. There are things. Let's see. There's still a celebration in Asia called Dong He, and of course all over the Americas. These, you know, understanding the cycle of the seasons is essential, whether, especially once you become sedentary, it becomes essential to the successful of your sedentary culture.
Right. I wonder if the Egyptians did anything like this. I know they marked a lot of their celebrations by the levels of the Nile, but I, I want to ask you that. Did they have?
Yeah, there is said to be celestial orientation with edifices in Egypt. Now there are some folks out there that go way way out there and say that that for instance they use this stuff as an argument that the pyramids and the Sphinx are far older than they actually are, and it's pretty sketchy. But just the baseline reality of the time that it took, because it took generations upon generations to figure this stuff out, and that's why I find the solstice such a compelling holiday, because people built celebrations around them because it meant that they had a fighting chance at surviving for another season.
Right, the rebirth of life as they knew it, and of course the renewal of the sun and things of that nature, because basically that's all they had as far as any type of sign or hope. Because I mean, these people live pretty rough lives, you know, either in their stone huts or wherever they were, camped around their fires or anything. I mean, but the fact that they were able to recognize this stuff from celestial navigation of some type, you know, it's always led me to believe that there was some type of influence that maybe had given them a little push along. I don't know.
Well, the lives these people led, it turns out to have been actually fairly complex and arguably rich lives, and ecologically successful in many instances. For instance, there's another one of these solstice markers in New Mexico, and I think Chaco Canyon. There's New Mexico in the conversation again for much better purposes, but the people of Chaco Canyon lived very successfully and brilliantly, one could argue, until they managed to deforest themselves, and climate change at that point in time may have played a role in that as well.
That's true, Bob. This planet has been through so many changes, you know, weather-wise and many other things that have happened. And there's so much that we don't know about our own planet and the people who have gone before us. Even, I mean, what do we have? 6,000 years of recorded history?
Six, seven. And, written history. And
that's what I mean. I mean, but there's so much before that that may have not been written down or maybe we will discover it later. I don't know.
Well, you know, Jung argued, Jim, that there is stuff that we remember on a subconscious level. That is, he argued that it's transmitted within the DNA. You know, fear of the dark. Because what? Because we don't have the vision that predator animals have in the dark.
Right.
That we remember the wolves in the forest in the cold northern night, or the predator cats in the humid jungle night, or whatever.
Well, you know, there was a great program that I recorded. It's called Fear of the Dark or something like that. I think it may have come on A&E before they stopped putting all these other trash on there, or maybe another program. But it's a great two-hour program about man's relationship with the dark and the Bortel. And remember we talked about the Bortel system of light and things of that nature?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good program worth watching if you can ever catch it. And it deals with man's relationship with the dark. And the dark meaning, of course, this is going to be one of the darkest nights of the year. Tomorrow night will be one of the darkest nights of the year. And how these people would, they lived in fear of it, really, because the darkness meant all kinds of ghoulies and ghosties and long-legged beasties, and not to mention the ones on 2 feet who were going to knock your ass in the head and rob you. But nonetheless, it was a pretty rough existence, and basically it was one in which these people would, as I said before, lock their doors, close their shutters. And if you had to be out on a night like that or whatever, you must have had a pretty good purpose, because the chances are you might not be able to get home. And, of course, it even references, for example, along the roads in certain places like Britain and things like that, where there will be hanged criminals in cages and things of that nature. And it would give rise to a lot of fear and superstition. And things.
And much, and because of the privileged position we occupy in terms of technology, Jim, we tend to forget that if you could, well, remember, you probably remember better than I do because you've got a couple of years on me, and some other folks as well.
You can say that again.
Do you remember the first shots of Earth from space? The first photographs?
How well I do.
And do you remember what the nighttime Earth looked like? With all those pinpoints of light all over it, and finding out that Paris really is the city of light, but that so was London, and so was New York. Well, if you could take a photograph,
if you could take a photograph.
Okay, I'm getting fed back.
Okay, I'm getting fed back at myself.
All right. Anything? Okay. Now we'll find it. All right. It must have remedied itself. If you could somehow have a space vehicle in orbit around the Earth, take those very same photographs, Jim, only 100 years before, say 1859, it's a much darker planet.
Oh, much, absolutely, because basically, you know, now you have to be at sea for 300 miles in order to get any type of real visual resolution of the night sky, and it was just you know, with the access of electricity and things of that nature, the planet has brightened up. But before that time, it was pretty dark, and there weren't too many searchlights beaming over anywhere, you know, and. And it's strange because, you know, the dark has a definite feeling on people. I mean, the nighttime is a time in which the will of the human being, according here again to our friend old Adolf and his compatriots, that's when they would hold their biggest rallies. Not in the day, but at night.
Oh, much more impressive.
Because but not only that, but he also said that the will of the people present at the rallies and things of that nature, and I guess the accompanying fear of the dark, in which the will would become much more pliable and accessible to the message that was being promulgated. And I'll get off here after just 2 seconds here, and that's the reason that they had these rallies around Zeppelin Field, surrounded by 130 searchlights that created that cathedral of light.
Well, anybody who has ever been to, and this is positively mundane as compared to what you just described, Jim, anybody who's ever been to a college football game in, say, Tuscaloosa, Alabama, or Baton Rouge, Louisiana, or even Morgantown, West Virginia, or up in Happy Valley in Pennsylvania in the daytime knows that it is a far different crowd when the lights come on and the game is played at night.
That's very true. That's very true. Absolutely.
I mean, I know from personal experience in Morgantown, it is almost a night game in Morgantown is almost, or at least was once upon a time, I assume still is, it has an almost frenzied quality to it.
Exactly, and that's the point of driving in, or I'm not trying to drive in anything, but that's the point I'm trying to share, is that at, you know, when it's dark, people's wills become a little more susceptible. Maybe they're afraid or whatever. And the presence of light has a certain impact upon their mental state and their mental capacity, in which they can be manipulated and also just basically think. You know, their mindset or think state. That's all I got to say. I'm sorry.
No, it's quite all right. If everyone doesn't mind, I'm going to shift gears for a moment. I didn't see this until a little bit ago. You know, I mentioned last night that marriage equality had been affirmed by the Supreme Court in New Mexico. Well, that was state number 17 plus the District of Columbia. This evening we have state number 18 plus the District of Columbia. And what a state it is. The state of Utah.
I saw that.
Oh, my God.
The land behind the Zion Curtain. Its Supreme Court has declared that marriage equality must hold sway in that state. But being Utah, they couldn't just make it gay folks able to get married. Bill, Jim, anybody remember one of the central facts upon which Utah's admission to the nation, to the Union, was predicated?
No polygamy.
No polygamy. Guess what's back in Utah?
Polygamy, or access to marriage, or I don't know. I mean, good Lord. I mean, I can't even think about some of the stuff I hear that comes out of it.
Yeah, they declared gay marriage to be legal in Utah and said so too is polygamy.
Really?
And Steve on my Facebook page noted, secretly, they're saying, now we can be real Mormons again.
Oh. Well, good for them. I don't know what to say about that.
You know, the lawyers are happy.
I mean, what the hell are they going to do with that bigamy?
I got two spouses, and it's mighty bigamy. That's what I say, Jim.
Oh,
in heaven. Oh, Lord have mercy. Oh, well, you know, hey, if you can afford it, if you can do it, I mean, you know, I can say, well, whatever.
Well, you know, when it comes right down to it, I don't care how people love each other and form families. But the thing is, the first thing that struck me when I read this was that, you remember how we talked about when, and we weren't really doing Friday on the Front Porch at the time, but after the Supreme Court had upheld the mandate, the individual mandate portion of the Affordable Care Act, and John Roberts said, well, no, Congress, you can't do it under the Commerce Clause, but you can do it as a tax. Well, everybody with two firing brain cells understood that he did that not as a function of jurisprudence, but as a function of the most odious politics.
The same thing
applies here. So now, and of course, the Republican, see that Obama, he done put another tax on us. He's a tax and spend liberal, communist, socialist, Kenyan, Muslim with a deep-seated hatred of white people, just like we told you. Well, that's the same thing with this ruling in Utah, because for instance, remember Rick Brofromix Santorum, and how he kept fulminating that if we allowed marriage equality between people of the same gender, that the next thing you know we'd have polygamy, and then famously that we'd have people marrying their dogs, and that's how he became known as Rick Man on Dog Santorum.
Look, one more thing. This fool in Louisiana was talking about, and I saw this pulled it up on the internet, about people who love their dogs and their animals and stuff like that. He was trying to make some kind of comment about people like me who are devotees of trying to take care of four-legged friends, that there was some kind of evil in me and evil in us.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, I wish somebody would just, I don't know. I mean, yeah, the guy, God almighty. But when I saw that, I said, I couldn't believe it. But his references were so oblique, but necessarily the intent was right behind them. And unless you are married to one woman, and unless you do it in the missionary style, and unless you do this, that, and the other, you are just you have become the accursed of everybody, and these people will separate you from their company, and they will shake the dust of your company off of their sandals, and it's just incredible. And the press this fool's getting,
But the funny thing out of this Utah ruling, Jim, is that if polygamy really does come back to Utah, then they finally will have, as Betsy alluded to last night, true biblical marriage. And last night Betsy referenced how Jacob, whose name was later changed to Israel when he went on the lam, had two wives, namely Leah and Rachel, and two concubines, Zilpah and Bilhah, or Bilhah and Zilpah. And, you know, that's marriage in the Bible.
Well, hell, Bob, I don't see how people can even afford that. Most people can't even afford one and keep it together, especially with the divorce rate in this country being 50%. I mean, you know, that's just totally atavistic. It's just totally...
Well, who a minute ago said that the Utah ruling was going to be great for the lawyers? Was that you, Bill?
Well, that's been my cynicism all along, yeah, about the whole thing. It took them long enough to figure it out that now anybody can marry anybody because everybody has to pay to get divorced from
them. Well, I've said the same thing. It's going to be great for the legal profession.
Yep.
Because, you know, you've got an entire new pool of potential clients out there.
And for wedding planners.
It's great for wedding planners, and if they go, can you imagine the polygamy wedding planner, and here's where it gets even more fun, the polygamy divorce lawyers. It's no longer going to be one lawyer versus one lawyer, and maybe there's a guardian ad litem for the kids. Now it's going to be one lawyer, another lawyer, and the legal profession will not have had it so well.
Well, Bob, isn't this a nullification of federal law?
That's what I was thinking. I mean, this is an attempt to set aside a condition precedent.
I mean, if you start with one, if states can get to this business that they can just, you know, whether it's in the Affordable Care Act or this marriage thing, if they can just say, no, we're going to do this and screw the people in D.C. or screw federal law and the super. The supersedence of federal law over state. I mean, we're leading basically into some type of dissolution of the union.
Well, that's why I brought up that there was more to this Utah decision than meets the eye.
Well, of course there is.
Don't think for an instant that including that polygamy language wasn't a poison pill to the whole thing.
That's very frightening to me. That's very frightening to me.
And, of course, they will holler. One, two, three. States' rights.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, this is a precedent that we can follow. I mean, look what happened to the Soviet Union in 1991 when it dissolved from being the USSR into the Commonwealth of Independent States. And look exactly what they are becoming, you know, coming back to.
More and more totalitarianism.
Back to the USSR.
Vlad Putin wants to put together something that still something that at least resembles the old Soviet Union. Look at the recent strong arming of the Ukraine.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if I were in his position, I think that's what, being KGB trained and brought up in the old system. And they've seen the troubles they've gone through, the trouble with their currency, and all the problems that the Commonwealth of Independent States isn't working, and they're going to go back to what they called at one time, I think under Lenin, democratic centralism and control from Moscow. Which, you know,
well, that's the goal with this these initial phases of the import-export group. They're trying to form an organization of states that can serve as some sort of a counterpoint to the EU.
Well,
they haven't reached common currency, and they might very well not, having watched the EU's experience with the euro or euro, and. You know, then again, Russia may also not necessarily have the financial ability to back the common currency the way that France and Germany did.
I think they will arrive at that particular position. I really do. I think they eventually will be able to solve that problem, be it might or right or whatever. But that's exactly what's happening in that part of the world. And I really believe that in maybe 10 years or less, that the USSR will, in fact, reassemble itself, and they will understand that at one time, that's how we were able to be a superpower in the world. And that's the way I see it. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm no seer. I'm no prophet, but whatever. It would appear to me as that's what they want to do. And if I were living in that country, I do believe after all the problems they had economically, when the ruble wasn't even worth the paper it was printed on, when there were so many wars and this, that, and the other, and you know, the whole thing just fell apart, and the old gods were destroyed, statues of Lenin and Dzerzhinsky and all those people were pulled down. Well, they saw that that wasn't too great a thing. And you had this emergence of this huge wealthy class of a few people. And, of course, Russian scientists and people who were academicians who were being, you know, sustained by the state, paid great salaries and things of that nature, they became basically common laborers. And they had no state pensions anymore because the federal, the federal power that came from central government was completely destroyed.
Well, there's, I think you're right, Jim, in thinking that there is, and seeing some possibly pernicious effects of the Utah ruling. Because it may, as Lottie just pointed out in the chat room, it may just be an attempt to get the whole idea before the Supreme Court and get the Supreme Court to once and for all rule that same-sex marriage is illegal and to roll back its rulings of this past summer.
Possibly. I mean, you know, it's extremely incredible how these people are able to, through oblique strategies, achieve their own ends. And they go through stages, and one's built on the other. And you really don't know what they're doing until it's done. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Well, there was a quip made in the chat room that I muted the microphone long enough to giggle at when Verblin in the chat room said, "I hope Mittens gives Queen Anne a sister wife." And isn't he a resident of the state of California now? So does he have to move? Does Bishop Willard Romney have to move back to Utah to fulfill the commandments of Joseph Smith and get himself three more wives? This is a legal can of worms that's been opened here. Will the Mormons run to the Supreme Court of the United States and demand that the full faith and credit clause of the Constitution of the United States afford them legal recognition for their polygamist marriages in every state in the Union? At which point, if they do that, then the same thing has to be said for same-sex marriage.
Definitely a possibility and accessibility to that end, I would think. I'll tell you.
You open up any.
I'm sorry.
What, Bill?
Well, you open up any. Jim said in the direction where you. And I agree that whenever you open up some legal situation, and there's a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, anything can happen. People are going to have every kind of battle you can think of if there's money involved or potential power involved.
Boy, talk about the camel's nose underneath the tent.
Yeah, and there's power involved, Bill, and there's money involved.
Well, I've noticed, as I say, it's amazing. And Bessie, I hope you're not offended when I mentioned the time period of the 80s and 70s when people were coming in because of religious views from Russia. But when I meet these beautiful young Russian women, if I had any teeth left, they'd all fall out. And
oh my God,
realizing that they were raised under a system, and a lot of them have bought into the old folks' home situation. They say this is a bad time of the year around here. And luckily for me, I can bite off a little bit less and not get involved with it too heavy, because it's tough to watch a lot of people suffer around the holidays, you know, a loss. Because that's when all the good folks come home to roost and all the SOBs are gone anyway, you know. Because at the holiday time, you don't miss the local bill collector and undertaker and everybody else, but you sure as hell miss cousins, aunts, uncles, grandparents, all the folks who just stood there and made life a very pleasant affair. Although it might have been a bunch of BS, but it still was very pleasant.
Bill, you're quite right. You're quite right. You know,
the night before Christmas.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you, Kevin.
I'm sorry. I thought you were done, Jim.
No, that's okay. You go on. I've said too much already.
Oh, no, you haven't. I was on a call last night with people for the American Way. They were talking about the election 2014. And if we lose the Senate, we being progressives, Democrats, we don't have to lose the presidency. It's all over. And that's, it ties into what you're saying here. Because they literally could run roughshod over us in any way they wanted to. And I think it was Jim that said a few minutes ago about these people wanting to secede from the Union. Essentially, that's what they're doing. They're still remaining part of the union because they want the tax benefits and that. But by this false states' rights argument, they're essentially seceding from the union, and essentially they want their freedom to do what they want to do. But that freedom doesn't entail to anybody else except them. If you're anything that they do not agree with, if you're gay, if you're whatever, if they don't agree with it, then they're more than happy to say that you have no right of freedom of speech, you have no right of freedom of religion, or to live your life how you wanted it. How you want to. But God forbid this Duck Dynasty star gets fired and we're somehow trampling on his freedom of religion. And I guess the whole point of me saying all this is that I'm really scared. I'm scared as hell right now because essentially if we lose the Senate next year, I don't even want to imagine what these people pass through.
Well, let's take this in. You know, great big things have to be taken in small bites.
Sure.
We know this much about what will happen after the midterm elections in 2014. The next morning, this nation will rotate on this earth into the rays of the sun, and night will become day. That's a longer form of saying the sun will come up, but saying the sun will come up makes me a little bit crazy because it's terracentric. Will things potentially fall apart faster? No doubt. Absolutely no doubt. But even with a Republican Senate and a Republican House, I'd like to hope that our Kenyan Muslim president, with a deep-seated hatred of white people and anti-colonialist tendencies, will not automatically roll over and play dead on the signature piece of legislation that is and will be his legacy for good or ill.
Well,
and it may be 2 long years of nothing but vetoes. But being a Democrat, I think we can also predict that he will negotiate either with himself or with the Republicans until he gets that grand bargain that he's been after. You know, entitlement reform. So there's reason to be afraid.
I think there's a lot more to be afraid of than that, Bob, because, I mean, of the inability of the two houses of government, our bicameral legislative system is concerned, to resolve problems, even to do anything, and whatever things they're able to tack together, that it could eventually result in their own dissolution of their own body.
Well, I mean, we know, for instance, Jim, that there will not be a veto. I mean, maybe we don't know it, but we can surmise with a fair degree of certainty that there will not be a veto-proof majority in the House, and it is almost a certainty that if the Republicans take the Senate, they will take it with something resembling the similar margin to what we have it now. Yep. So that will not be veto-proof either.
Yeah, but what I was trying to say is this. I can remember in studying a lot of the things about Germany in pre-Hitler, when he came to power, literally the Reichstag, the representative of the German government, literally voted to put its own self out of existence. And, of course, with nature abhorring a vacuum, guess who comes in? Your fascists and these types of people who, in the absence of representative government, they're going to implement their will, the triumph of the will, over everybody and implement their own imprimatur or mark upon anybody, and those people who don't toe the line, well, Katie bar the door.
Oh, I just had an update from Danny, who wrote in about the Utah decision. He said, I hate to be the contrarian, but the Utah ruling did not legalize polygamy. It's being characterized that way, but it didn't. It ruled on two things. One, the court held that the state didn't have a compelling interest in banning people of the same gender from marrying, because the Attorney General of Utah had argued that people of the same gender marrying would somehow cause heterosexual marriages to fail, and the court just didn't bite. But in rejecting that argument, the court ruled that marriage equality or same-sex marriage is in fact now legal. Here's where the polygamy business comes in. The other issue, Danny notes, had to do with the state's definition of cohabitation. Again, the state failed to prove a compelling state interest in defining or restricting how people choose to live together or be a family, but didn't directly address polygamy or marriage. Hence, the state's regulations and laws on who can and cannot cohabitate were voided, but it did not legalize cohabitation per se. Or it didn't legalize polygamy per se. And Danny closes saying, love the show, and so glad to hear Bill again, and how quickly we all acted when the problem struck, and hearing how well Bill has recovered. So, you know, you're getting a lot of good wishes here, Bill.
Too damn stupidly tough. You know, when you start out dumb, and you just get dumber, you just keep hanging on something or other. And because of this bunch here on the phone that I'm with, usually you guys can come up with stuff to make me think. And man, do we need it. I have a current roommate in the building, and he was badly injured in a car wreck. And this guy just stones me. He's so tough. I said, my God, I used to think I was tough. This guy is only 50-ish or early 60s, but he's hard as nails. And that, you know, some people get upset by that, but there are times when to be tough through a hard situation requires a lot of you as a human being.
That's very true.
Let me bring on another blinking light. Stand by for a sec.
Okay.
Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm Dave.
Yeah. Okay, Dave. Welcome to Friday on the Front Porch.
Yeah. I've been enjoying your conversation here. So, I was really intrigued. If anybody was really worried about the Republicans taking the Senate. I mean, it seems like they hate each other so much now. I don't know how they can win any election.
Oh. Wonder who.
What was that?
Not me.
You know, that used to happen on my Bell line every freaking day, and I had it on tape, and I shipped it to Bell and said, do you guys hear this? Oh, we'll fix it. Shit, that line was shutting down. And still doing that every day between 2 and 3.
Well, you know, once upon a time we had standardized phones, Bill, and now everybody's got a different phone, and you'd be surprised the number of them that you can mute yourself or redial or call for pizza or whatever just by moving your head the wrong way and touching the keypad the wrong way.
Jeez, I'm afraid of that one. I mean, how many pizzas am I supposed to eat? You happen to like what? I missed it.
No. Dave, you said, so you don't think that, you don't think there's a possibility of the Senate falling into Republican hands next year?
Well, I don't know what the, how many Democratic seats and Republican seats are up, but I can't see the Republicans are so unpopular now. Since they've been running the Congress, it's just been, you know, the approval ratings are at zero, and then just like, I don't know who's going to vote for them. And they all hate each other. I mean, the teabaggers hate the capitalists, and I don't know how anybody's going to make it out alive out of the primary.
Yeah, but they close ranks in elections.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think there's some animosity building up over there. It's nice to see.
Yeah, but what about the primaries? There's going to be a bloodbath in the primaries.
That's going to be fun to watch.
But I think a visual, I'd love to put it on a T-shirt or something. Picture Ted Cruz wielding the Senate gavel as the majority leader in 2015.
That'll never happen.
That's a motivator. That's a motivator. I mean, I'm sure a lot of
folks... We should just turn elections into a full contact sport and be done with it.
Like rollerball.
Well, there was a time, wasn't there?
Charles Sumner.
Well, that and just every ordinary election, people would go out to torchlight parades, which would, as Jim would, I'm rest assured, agree with, would turn into some open maneuvers, open field of hell. Our damned armies in the Civil War, they got to a point where they had to have snowball fights with each other, you know, amongst their own armies, just to have something to kill time in a winter. So, hell, you never know with the kind of election that we used to see here would end up in a hand-to-hand mess.
Well, jump in, Spark.
Can I do a little update on the state of Jefferson, California?
Oh, yes, please. That's all. Yeah, that's always interesting.
Movement. There was a movement here to get put the issue on some of the county ballots, but then some news service or somebody did a statewide poll, and it just flopped big time on a statewide, because the whole state has to approve the succession, and let's say bye-bye to the North State. So it's not going anywhere. It's kind of blew the sails, steam out of their sails, all these nuts up here in Northern California.
Are you down in Northern California? Are you Northern California?
I'm in the real Northern California.
Like Redding or something, or north of there?
Just south of Redding.
Okay, yeah. So
You know where Red Bluff is?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. I've driven I-5 about 8 million times.
That's where I live now. Went to high school here and grew up here. I'm living in the family mansion.
Oh, awesome. That sounds awesome. That's a beautiful country down there.
We call it
Portland.
Yeah, Duncan, we call it the manor life.
Yeah. I'll tell you something funny, though. The ranch behind my house, the house is, it's out, it's all by itself. It's like 500 yards from our back fence to the rancher's house. But he has a Christmas light display that would make Clark Griswold
green with envy.
Yeah, and I'm just going, all I can say is he must have a little kid that he's, I met the guy, so I know he might have smaller, because when the cows were crying to get the acorns, I met the guy. And but anyway, he must have a small kid that wants to see the house lit up or some, for some reason. I mean, because I live out in the country. There's no street lights. I mean, when it's dark here, it's dark. I mean,
you see the stars.
The stars are just absolutely amazing, and the full moons and everything. But to walk out back and to see that little house sitting there with all its lights on, it's just, I just think, what is this guy trying to say? What is it, what is this statement to the world? I'm here.
It's the number one thing that freaks me out about the country is the lack of street lights.
Well, it's better to light a candle than perish of darkness, I guess. I mean, maybe.
I don't know. There's a lot to be said for standing out in the dark and just shouting obscenities. I've tried it a couple of times.
Oh, dear, Bob. I can't imagine you doing that. Were you clothed?
You had to ask.
And I had a cool nature moment this morning.
Oh, dear.
This big old hawk flew into the redwood tree and was tearing the shit out of something. I don't know what he was eating, but it was just fascinating to watch.
Having some breakfast, huh?
Yeah. I mean, this redwood tree we got out back is like over 100 feet tall, and he just landed on one of the brow, you know, the how the redwood trees, the branches come out. Well, he just landed on one and just on like on the second layer from the bottom, you could see it out the back window, and he just started going to town on whatever he was eating. And he'd look around, he'd rip it apart and go back to eating and look around, rip it apart some more.
Sounds like he had a cafeteria there.
Yeah, I don't know whether it was a bird. I hope it was a ground squirrel.
Oh, Lord.
Well, we had an inner-city version of that where a buddy of mine's pit got into it with a raccoon in a drained swimming pool. What a mess.
Hey, I've got a wolf.
Both of the combatants crawled away to something. To the vet, probably, you know.
Hey, look, guys, I've got a wolf who comes up here two or three nights a week and sleeps on a Charleston bench on my patio.
A real wolf?
Yes, sir.
Oh, they've made it to West Virginia, Duncan.
Oh, yeah, they have. And you know, he's, you know, owl in the daytime, owl lot opens door at night. But, you know, I'll put something out there for him because, you know, he's been displaced. He needs food and stuff like that. And maybe I'm being wrong in doing this, but, you know, I can look up right now and see those two eyes of the dark.
I don't think you're doing anything wrong, Jim.
Yeah.
What happened, Duncan, is wolves up in the Great Lakes area, like where I've been, began migrating eastward along the south side of the Great Lakes, eventually found their way to Pennsylvania and western New York, and along the way mated with stray dogs and coyotes because they can successfully breed together.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, there are wolves in western New York, western Pennsylvania, and moving southward into West Virginia.
Yeah.
And they are not true wolves as such. They are wolf coyote hybrids.
Mm-hmm.
Which means they have all the wolf skills, plus they have the cunning tenacity for survival that a coyote has. because truthfully speaking, coyotes are harder to kill off than a wolf is. For instance, a coyote, if you put hunting pressure on a coyote, by the way, that's another one of those fun words that comes from the Native American. Coyotl is a Nahuatl word, again, from the Mexica. If you put hunting pressure on coyotes, they will actually breed and have larger litters. Whereas if there's no hunting pressure on them, they have smaller litters.
Well, there's only one county in the state of California where you can legally hunt coyotes at night. That's where my stepson lives. Modoc County. It's the sparsest populated county in California.
Does it get cold there?
Modoc County.
Does it get cold there?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like 4,000 feet altitude.
Oh, wow.
It gets below zero all the time.
Should it be like northeastern California or something?
Well, it's right south of Klamath Falls, you know where Tule Lake
on
is.
The northern border, huh?
Yeah, you go Klamath Falls, Tule Lake area.
Okay,
internment camp.
Okay, I'm adding another place in the United States that I won't move to the list.
We did have a wolf come down in California last year, a couple years ago, and they were tracking it, and they called it OR7. It was really famous.
Is there any way you can
the cougars are making a huge comeback in California, too.
Oh, they're everywhere.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, they got one in Griffith Park in L.A., of all places.
We had one right down by the river a couple of years ago here.
Oh, yeah, they're all over. They're all over. They will travel like 500 miles to mate. You know, they're incredibly stealth, and they can travel long distances. They're really good at that.
Well, they're territorial, and they get kicked.
Yeah.
They move on. They expand. They're constantly expanding their territories.
Yeah, they need a lot of space. They move.
Hey, Bill, were you saying something?
Yeah, I'm talking to one of the residents here.
Oh, okay.
We only have one phone that works, so I may have to clear the line here.
I understand.
He'll be back in 15 minutes, okay?
Okay. Are you taking off, Bill?
No. What time is it?
It is 26 minutes before 9 p.m.
Well, give me 10 minutes quick, and I'll cut out of the end.
Oh, okay. Whatever works.
Yeah, I want to say a round of goodbyes and happy holidays.
Well, they are much happier for having heard from you, Bill.
Well, that's one thing I can ruin anybody's holiday. There's no doubt about it. give me a few minutes worth of jokes, and you'll be.
Well, you're working. Then you're working a different side of the street this time through.
Well, I'll tell you what. Listening to these guys talk about the coyotes and the wolves, I've heard this and read this stuff within the last 5, 6, 7 years. There's a lot of movement going on. I listen to an outdoor show. It shows up every Sunday morning in the different areas of the country, and they talk about it. It's a big deal now. It's bad business. Because it's going to be Jim, you know, for instance, you've got cats. And you catch those wolves around those cats, you know?
Well, I mean, they're both at the patio thing looking out, and they're both crouched down. And even my 29-pound cat, who is part wildcat, Rufus, he's looking, real pensive right now.
Well, Jim, one of the things, and this is specific to the area, one of the things that allows these, and it is an invasive species. I'm not trying to talk mean about them, but they are not currently, maybe once upon a time they were, but they are not currently native to the area. One of the reasons that they're able to proliferate here is there's nothing... They're kind of at the head of the food chain. barring humans shooting, killing, trapping, or poisoning them, there's nothing that preys upon them. And so, as a consequence, and part of that is because the habitat for so many of the wild fauna of this area has been completely destroyed. I mean, remember, there is an area of central Appalachia that takes in a greater area than that of, I think, Delaware and Rhode Island combined that just doesn't exist anymore.
You're right there. Absolutely.
I mean, when you blow up a mountain, you don't just, you know, you don't just blow up a mountain. You blow up everything that lives on the mountain.
And it is displaced.
Yeah. And that could very well have something to do, you know, you're not that far where you are, Jim, from mountaintop removal.
No, I'm not. But I will say this. If one of the contraindications of that is bringing this cat to me, then it's at least, well, if I could say it, it's brought me so much love and so much comfort. And I'll tell you one thing right now. My days are numbered anyway. And he is the only thing on this world that I will regret leaving.
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, boy, that's the problem when you're living in a city situation. Like, I was living in a semi-suburban, and a buddy of mine came out and find his pit going against a raccoon in a empty swimming pool. Oh, brother, what a mess!
Yeah, and there's nothing bigger in this area. There's nothing bigger than a wolf or bigger than a coyote. There are as Jim alluded to, there are wildcats bobcats really. But nothing much bigger than that.
Bears.
Well, there are bears, but a bear is not prone to. A wolf is more likely to go after a bear than a bear is to go after a wolf.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was using that old expression, painter. It was used out on the frontier. Well, Jim, what was that? A panther?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Old English.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe so.
Panther, wildcat, then of course the cougar.
Bobcat, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. Well, bobcat's a little bit smaller, you know, with the little face and the ears. And
I think that's what mine is. He's part bobcat.
Yeah, that was my guess. Because if he was part wildcat, he'd be even bigger than he is, Jim.
Well, I'll tell you, 29 pounds, that's a lot of a cat.
Yeah, imagine him at 58.
I don't think I could handle that, but, you know, thank God he should.
God, he'd go to sharpen his claws and the house would come down.
You got a point there. He'd be sharpening on me. He'd be all right. But,
you know what the big predator automobiles is? Made that wrong. Wild animals out here in California is automobiles.
Yeah. Well, same thing with deer around here.
Oh.
I never forget. Driving back from Sacramento one time, and here's a dead coyote on the side of the I-5.
Oh, I said, Duncan, I saw once upon a time, I saw the after effects of a pickup truck that hit a bear.
Oh, dear God.
And that was, well, it didn't work out well at all for the bear, and it didn't work out particularly well for the person in the truck wound up in the hospital, and the truck was totaled.
Well, I come across a couple of ladies in the middle of the night coming back from Susanville one time that hit a range cow. Luckily, they had airbags.
What's a range cow?
Open range, up in the high
like wild?
High areas, huh?
No, not wild, but simply allowed to roam free in unfenced spaces.
Right.
There's open range up in the mountains near Susanville. There's a cutoff between Redding and. You go over and you hit Highway 44 to 36, and you go over to Susanville, and then you drop down into Reno. That area, it's high desert area, and you see cattle guards everywhere you go up there.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. I'm not that familiar with that area so much. I've been a lot in Inyo County. I've spent a lot of time.
You know what a cattle guard is, don't you?
Absolutely, yes. Yes, definitely.
For the rest of us, Duncan?
It's like a railroad track bridge the cows can't
go. Oh, yeah. The with the piping?
Yeah, we're like tracking.
The fence line. You go across the fence line.
Narrow gauge. Narrow gauge track. It looks kind of like a railroad track.
Yeah.
So the cows aren't going to go through it because they can't. Their hooves get stuck in it. They look at it and they go.
Yeah, it's spaced to where they can't go over it.
And they're not real smart, but they're smart enough not to step in that.
Yeah.
Well, when you first said cattle guards, I thought you meant something on the front of a vehicle, because a lot of the good old boys around here put on their trucks what are euphemistically referred to as Bambi bumpers, and they're metal, hard metal piping grates that go around the front of the vehicle so that hopefully you won't knock your engine 3 inches back when you hit Bambi.
Yeah.
Or yeah, it's like a grill guard. Like when you're off roading and stuff like that, you don't get the whole front of your car destroyed.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, fellas, I got to clear the line here for somebody else. But just enjoy the best of this type of season, the type that to us as human beings really exists, and it doesn't have much to do with. Yeah.
Well, Bill, I miss the hell out of you.
Well, we have indeed missed you, Bill.
Back.
Well, we'll be live Monday and Tuesday night too. So.
Yeah, well, I'm going to talk to. There's one guy in the family that if I can get him to, what I need badly is to recopy my names and addresses in large print, so I can use the telephone.
This is Thomas here. You hear me?
Oh yeah. How are you, Thomas?
Good. I have it. So I'll take care of it.
Well, Bill, we'll see you next week, I hope.
Good night. I'm getting off the phone.
Okay.
Right, Bill, I'm blissed to hear you. I'm really blissed.
Well, I'm lucky that some of the doctors actually do know what they're doing. And it was the weirdest thing. I was just sitting here getting angry, and the next thing you know, I'm blowing. I look like I just got through with 40 minutes of football, playing half a game and getting my head bounced around. Well, of course, I think we all spend life doing that, don't we? Yeah, emotionally getting our heads bumped around. Anyway, folks, happy holidays to all of you. And as I say, I get a kick out of when I hear Texas Betsy. It always brings back the expressions and the common sense of my father-in-law, who took a young German kid and shook him emotionally to a point where he could understand a little more about everything. Because I think I was 26 or 7 at the time, and thought I knew everything, and for sure as hell didn't. Bob, good luck to you and everybody else, and Thomas, I'll be happy to talk to you about anything, anytime, you know that.
Well, thank you, Bill.
Well, you hang in there.
Thank you for spending the evening with us, and thank you for absolutely making the holiday for a whole lot of people who'd been very worried about you. And are even more thrilled to hear how good you sound.
An intelligent audience is one that can make you laugh, too. Isn't that right, Kevin?
Yep.
Well, I hope.
Go ahead.
You told the story last night of how the Lone Ranger and Tonto were surrounded by Indians.
Yeah, you mean... Yeah, I think I know the story, Bill, you were talking about.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that.
What do you mean, we, Kemosabe?
Exactly. Yep. Yeah.
Well, Isaac has a story he'd love me to tell, but...
Oh, believe me, I've already been tweeted at about that.
Well, ask him to tell you the story.
Oh, you told me the story.
Oh, okay, I did tell you.
Yeah.
It was just... You're only young and stupid once in life.
Yeah, I will leave it up to you to
five times.
Yeah, I will leave it up to you to decide what is decorous radio. But
Well, I have a... Well, I was going to say about my first father-in-law and that first family of mine. Two of those uncles were on that little group of Jeep carriers down there in the Philippines.
Oh, yeah? Lady Gulf and Surigao Straits and, yeah.
Yep. And, man, these guys would be great guys at Thanksgiving dinner. And periodically they'd catch you afterward and give you a good ear-ringing historic. Because, man, that's hard to learn from people. It's a real historic observation.
Yeah, first person.
And my second father-in-law, who was on Saipan and Tinian and Iwo, he could do that to me on a dark night out with a fishing rod in your hand. You want to close the rod up and get the hell out of there. The shadows dancing across the lake, you just didn't know what the hell you were seeing. And he would say to me, he'd say, Bill, how do you know about this kind of stuff? Now, you weren't there. I said, no, but a lot of men who were there alongside you wrote about it. And the good guys didn't exaggerate or bullshit, because the truth in itself is both nasty and good enough about human behaviors on all sides. It's enough to make you think. Because the more we think about, maybe the less violence we'll do. The more we think and observe and point out that this stuff happens, maybe there's a change, I hope. Anyway, I'll let you go, folks.
All right, have a wonderful weekend, and I hope we'll be talking soon, Bill.
Yeah, well, next week, I actually observe a birthday, which is a weird thing for a musician to be born on. 2 seconds after 1 second, or 2 seconds after midnight on January 1st. You know, your career is sealed. And that had nothing to do with flapping of wings or arms. Or bouncing a tennis ball off my nose. Although sometimes I think my singing kind of resembled that. Anyhow, folks, take care.
Good night, Bill.
Good night, good night, Bill. Take care.
Good night, Bill.
Bye now. Man, that's special.
You got the video queued up, Bob?
No, in fact, I don't, because there's so little time.
Okay.
There's so little time left in the program. We really can't. You know, there's nothing to bump to. So right. we'll probably work that on Monday.
Bob, I got to tell you that. That was really something to hear from Bill tonight.
Well, all
load off of my mind.
All the thanks in the world go to Thomas for making that happen. You still there, Thomas? Thomas?
No, I don't think he's there. He was on a phone line or something.
Yeah, I think I heard him. He was dropping off.
Oh, okay. Because I'm
He was doing a three-way phone call or something.
Oh, okay, because I was a little confused there, because I'm looking at my lines here and I know, okay, that's Jim and that's Bill and
you know,
that's
that,
Kevin,
you know,
and that's Dave, and I couldn't figure, and Thomas wasn't in the Skype chat, so I was clueless.
You know that secret thing he does with
Richard sometimes?
That thing.
Oh, okay.
That's what he was doing.
That's cool. Well, it is about 10 minutes before the hour, and I think we're gonna have somebody else join the conversation. Stand by here.
Thomas.
Hey, is that you, Thomas?
Correct.
Awesome.
Yeah, I had Bill hooked in through my cell phone. I had him wrapped up in my lunch bucket in an afghan, so nobody could hear anything going on in the house, so you could talk to Bill.
Oh. That's really, really neat, Thomas. Thank you so much. And just from everybody.
Yeah, let me get into it. I got a cross talk here, so I got to get to the other room.
Oh, okay. Just from everybody here in the Horn Family Commune, our thanks to everything you've done to help see to his needs and see to his well-being, Thomas.
Yeah. I'm planning on going up there tomorrow. There's some things, and just heard that he doesn't have, I turned off the phone list for him and it's gone, so I'm going to have to do that again, so, you know, we'll work it out.
Okay. And you said, and I don't think I'm talking out of class or anything, but you said that you've also worked or checked in on his phone transfer and everything for the new place he's moving to?
Yeah, that phone rings now. The new one rings. His old phone doesn't ring, and I don't know what the status of his belongings are. It's like he, you know, tried to get Sunday to get into his apartment. The doorman or his electronic scan doesn't work, and so he's like, I'll work that out tomorrow.
Okay, cool. Well, you have done a bunch, Thomas.
Hey,
you know,
Thomas.
I
appreciate Bill Reitzman doing all he did.
I was wondering about that, Thomas.
Yeah.
Because he said he was going to get involved.
They're doing their little bit, and the music community is coming out because the first person I called was calling the Salt. He calls the Salt Blues Project, and they're showing up and trying to help out, and so, you know, it'll work out.
Well, you know, thank you for helping another human being. That is truly an example of a doer of whatever
you
want it to be.
Well, I'm going to hang up now. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Thomas, again, thank you very much. And hopefully, depending on how things work out, you know, Monday or the Christmas Eve show or whatever.
Yeah, I just work Monday, and I'm off, and so I have time, and I can put some more effort into it. We'll see.
Well, thanks a lot, Thomas. You have yourself a wonderful weekend.
You too. You have a happy time off, and enjoy your family.
All right. Take care.
Good night.
Bye now. And so there's Thomas. And I guess it's pretty much close to time to wrap all of this up. I don't think it's gotten to the place where I don't think any particular program flies by as quickly as Friday on the Front Porch does.
Hey, Bob, I want to ask you something.
Yeah.
You ever make sausage balls?
This is not a joke?
No.
Yes, I absolutely do. With the sharp cheddar and the baking mix and the sausage and
mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, well no, we can roar through those things here.
Doing that tonight.
Oh, yummy. Well, since we're talking about holidays, have you ever, Jim, just for the fun of it sometime, because I think you'd probably, A, like it, and, B, just sort of enjoy the karma of it. Get online and look up Rosalind Carter Plains Cheese Ring.
Rosalind Carter Cheese Rake?
Ring. Plains Cheese. Rosalind Carter Plains Cheese Ring.
Right.
It's a recipe for, you know, for an hors d'oeuvre at a party or whatever. Apparently Rosalind used to take these to, you know, get togethers. I first had it when I was a young man and moved to Atlanta, and it is absolutely delicious. You make it in like a jello rolled or a jello mold or a bundt pan that's got a hollow in the middle.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
And it's got chopped up pecans and onions and celery in it with cheeses and
howdy.
And then when you plate it, you put pour a jar of strawberry jam into the center hollow, and you eat the cheese ring with the jam on a wheat thin or a Triscuit or what have you. And there's a little bit of cayenne in the cheese ring, and oddly enough, the zip of the chili combines with the sweetness of the strawberry, and it's absolutely and the pecans for a little bit of crunch. It's awesome. Rosalind Carter Plains Cheese Ring.
Well, Lord, if the Lord had made anything you better, he'd kept it for himself.
There you go. There you go. Interestingly, I've never found a recipe for the Nancy Reagan anything, but the Rosalind Carter Plains Cheese Ring is just delicious.
Nancy Reagan? Oh, Lord.
Nancy Reagan. Yeah.
I would love to see a Nancy Reagan cookbook.
Oh, dear God.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to offend anybody.
First, fire. First, call the help. Right.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh Lord, have mercy.
Well, enjoy the sausage balls, and
me too. I mean, I wish everybody with the sound of my voice a very great holiday. Whatever you're doing, and whatever you believe in, you know.
may it bring peace on earth or peace into your own inner sanctum or whatever. That's what this whole season's about.
Indeed. Well, y'all take care, and if I'm around and haven't already fallen asleep or anything, maybe I'll pop in for the Horn Malloy Skype chat group at 12:05 Eastern, 9:05 Pacific. I'm sorry, I just got a giggle from the chat room. Mr. Gibson just, hey Jim, you'll like this. Mr. Gibson just posted Nancy Reagan's doorstop fruitcake.
Ah, that's funny.
Oh Lord.
But you all have a wonderful weekend, and we'll be back here on Monday for more and Monday, and then Tuesday's Christmas Eve, off on Wednesday, regular program schedule Thursday and Friday.
Now, you're going to play song requests Christmas Eve?
Yeah, here and there a couple. There's one that I always like that's become a sort of modern tradition. Ferg will be doing the reading from the nativity scene. He's got a couple of tunes that he's worked up, and he's working his courage up to come and play them. It could be, we can work some requests in. You guys have a good evening. Thanks a bunch.
Night, Bob.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Good night, Kevin. Take care. Good night, Jim. Good night, Dave. And yeah, these Fridays on the front porch really fly by. Good night, chat room. And I want to thank Sal, even though we weren't doing a lot of active fundraising this evening, Sal was there as he so often is, and we really appreciate his help. We will start out with a straight up regular funding evening on Monday. We'll have a gap to cover for Wednesday. But anyway, not even thinking about that right now. Thinking about hoping everybody has a happy holiday weekend. And we'll see you for more in Monday. Thanks always go out, of course, to the all-volunteer staff of the Horn. Thanks, Randy, for the time checks. You know how bad I am at keeping up with those. That's why I don't work in clock-oriented, automation-centric radio, I guess. Thanks to our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox. Happy solstice to you, John, since it's already there, or nearly there, and to all of our friends in Australia and on the other side of the international dateline generally. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT.org, ACHECT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. And here comes Rick Smith on the Horn.